Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the beloved Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Daniel Foster of National Review Online, who's in for Jim Garrity this week. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Dan, there's been a lot of discussion this week about Fast and Furious. There's been a lot of talk about the president's trip to Mexico. There's been a lot of talk about, of course, the European situation, Syria, all this stuff. Anytime the subject can change, even if it's not great news, that helps the president a little bit. But Mitt Romney's doing a pretty good job of staying on message here. This is his discussion with Sean Hannity. Hannity asked him a question about whether the U.S. is at a tipping point in terms of our debt and our economy. And Romney was perfectly ready for it, and he's got a good answer about the two choices Americans have this November.
I think we're on the road to Greece, or to Spain, or to Italy, or to California. We're on a road that says, look, we could have a setting where we spend more and more as a government, where we borrow more and more, where government becomes more and more intrusive in our lives, and we change the very character of America, and we become more like Europe. And we know where that leads. I mean, that leads to Europe with high unemployment, very low wage growth, potential fiscal calamity. Or we're going to return to the principles of opportunity and freedom and giving people in this country the chance to realize their dreams.
He's obviously spending most of his oxygen on this issue, but I think he's got his message down pretty well.
There's a lot of things to say about this. There's been a lot of criticism. Peggy Noonan had a column on this, and Ross Douthat had a column on this about it being dangerous for Romney to be too one-dimensional and too boring and too non-controversial and stick to this, you know, Jobs message. I mean, everyone sort of agrees that that's issue number one, but you can go too far and look like you're really just running a very defensive campaign and not really staking out any new territory or saying anything interesting or bringing any new ideas to the table. But I do think if he harps on this choice that Paul Ryan has so eloquently posed for the last couple of years, this choice between becoming more like Europe and more like America, I think that's very powerful. And Europe has a lot of problems right now for world historic reasons. I'll give you, Greg, a great cocktail party answer to a liberal. Whoever brings up, why can't we be more like Europe? They're happy. They have massive social welfare state. They're not run by totalitarians and all starving in the street like you whack job conservatives suggest. Whenever I hear that at a party, I borrow the Kagan line, Europe gets to be Europe because for 50 of the last 60 years, there were 5,000 Abrams tanks in Germany doing the guns part for Europe. So they got to focus exclusively on butter for the entire Cold War, or more on butter than they would have otherwise. So when Europe had to choose between guns and butter during the Cold War, we gave them the guns. They got all the butter. Now, for the last 20 years, we've seen Europe have a go of this massive social welfare state on its own without really American hegemony picking up a lot of the slack there. They tried the European Union. A lot of conservatives said it was a bad idea at the time. And it looks like they're largely now being redeemed. So Europe's hitting massive stumbling blocks now. You can't have an economy like Greece's with a currency like Germany's in a context where today, perfect example, the European Court of Social Justice ruled, I don't know if you saw this, Greg, ruled that yes, if you get sick on vacation, you're entitled to more vacation.
That's right.
That's a fundamental right in Europe. You can't do all that. And I think the potential calamity in the EU right now is evidence of just how much strain there is on that model. So rounding this all back to Romney, I do think this is a once in a generation conversation. It's not just, oh, the unemployment rate's high, let's make this election about jobs. It really is a fundamental conversation about which direction this country is heading in, and I hope we win it.
Yeah, we have to win it. That's a really critical question. We answered it well in 1980. Let's see if we answer it well in 2012. But the Three Martini Lunch is equal opportunity here, as you know, Dan. So we giveth Mitt Romney credit, and now we taketh it away. The one time he has recently gotten off message on the economy, he was speaking to a Latino group down in Florida, saying that the president is taking their vote for granted. That's fine. He is. And he's now pandering to them. But Mitt Romney is clearly feeling pressured as a result of what the president did here. Because during the primary season, Mitt Romney had no bones about saying he was against the DREAM Act. Well, lo and behold, Marco Rubio has something that looks sort of like the DREAM Act. And Marco Rubio is a conservative. So therefore, Mitt Romney's now hitching his wagon pretty much to that star, saying he is now in favor of young illegals who came here under their parents' direction and aren't 30 years old. As long as they served in the military, that's his one wrinkle, they can stay. And whatever you think of the policy, it just once again brings back the conventional wisdom that Mitt Romney will say whatever he thinks will help him in the moment politically, and he can't keep doing that.
I think it is a bit problematic for him, but also it's only a problem because he's already had this reputation of being a flip-flopper on so many other issues. I mean, nobody can act, like you said, whatever you think on the policy. Brief aside, we had Senator John Kyle here at NR last week, and he told us this was the day that Obama announced his, you know, unilateral executive fiat instating the DREAM Act. Kyle said that the version of DREAM that he was co-sponsoring with Rubio was going to be accepted, and this is pretty close to a direct quote, with tolerance by the most conservative members of the Senate and with enthusiasm by everybody else. So this was actually going to be a rare bipartisan win, at least according to Senator Kyle, who is on his way out, so he has no reason to BS us. Whatever you think about the policy, though, Romney has this reputation for being a flip-flopper. But there's also something much simpler at play here, which is the age-old dynamic of run right in the primary and run to the center in the general. I mean, yes, it's not exactly the most principled thing in the world. Yes, it reinforces an existing stereotype about Mitt Romney, not even just a stereotype, but in fact, many ways, a truth. But it's also a pretty not surprising aspect of a general election campaign.
It probably is, but he was very specific in the primary season. He's probably going to be called on it as the general election season rolls along. Obviously, both parties are terrified of losing Hispanic voters. I think Republicans a little more than Democrats, who, as Romney said, probably are taking most of it for granted. But some of that move to the center is necessary. But Romney has got to not feed the fire when it comes to that perception of him, because, as you said, there's a lot there that makes that stereotype pretty accurate. So on to martini number three now. And, Dan, I didn't realize that all of us had the privilege of essentially being married to Barack Obama. And you're listening to this and you're thinking, what is he talking about? Well, in a new email sent out to Obama's campaign list, Michelle Obama writes this. For the first 10 years of our marriage, Barack and I lived in an apartment in my hometown of Chicago. The winters there can be pretty harsh, but no matter how snowy or icy it got, Barack would head out in the cold, shovel in hand, to dig my car out before I went to work. In all our years of marriage, he has always looked out for me. Now I see that same commitment every day to you and to this country. The only way we'll win this election is if we can rely on another like that. So the words looked out for me probably could be substituted for take care of me. That's exactly the way that these people look at the role of the government, and it's just nauseating.
It's a very creepy email, and I hope that President Obama doesn't intend to consummate the marriage with the United States of America. Is it just a, you know, BS in a campaign email? Yeah, but you're right. It's indicative of the way they look at things. And Jonah had a great line during the whole Life of Julia fiasco about how one of the creepiest things that he's ever heard come out of a White House is, under President Obama, Julia decides to have a baby. So this is, again, it's, you know, kind of reinforcing that cradle-to-grave aspect of liberalism. And I don't want a president to look out for me, you know? I think that's what animates, you know, conservatism is, I want him to get out of my way. It's one of the oldest truths of conservatism, but just clear a path for me.
Yeah, leave me alone is basically the mantra that, for the most part, we want. You know, provide for the common defense, you know, those things that the Constitution calls for. Do that. The rest of it, you know, let me rise and fall on my own initiative. I think that's what made this country great. And unfortunately, we've got way too many people now who unfortunately see Barack Obama as the person that's got to lift them up and hold them up and be there for them and get their back and all this kind of stuff. So a lot of things being decided this year. Dan, great to be with you all week. Thanks for filling in for Jim. We'll talk to you later.
No problem. Thanks a lot, Greg.
Daniel Foster is the news editor at National Review Online. Jim Garrity will be back with me on Monday. Please join us then for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.